Hey, what's up, everyone? Welcome back to another episode of Timeout Talk. Today, we're going to be talking about the FIBA World Cup, the potential for next year's Olympics, some stuff with the NBA Board of Governors, and more. So, without further ado, let's jump right into it.
All right, welcome back, everyone. So we have a jam-packed episode, so let's just jump into it. And we're gonna start this episode by talking about some unfortunate news if you're a fan of USA basketball, like Hunter and I both are. And that's the US not even taking a medal in the FIBA World Cup, when we had both
Tough.
predicted them to win the gold here. It was a tough loss to Germany. And then losing to Canada in the medal game. So I guess we should start with that because that's honestly probably the biggest surprise from this FIBA World Cup. This US team wasn't the best roster we sent out, but still had a lot of talent on that squad between Jalen Brunson, Brandon Ingram, Jaren Jackson Jr., and more. So, Hunter, what did you see from this USA team? Why couldn't they get it done? And what does this mean for the future of USA basketball?
Yeah, I think the biggest thing was obviously in that game against Canada, we didn't start Jaren Jackson Jr. Actually, he didn't even play. We started Walker Kessler, and he looked okay out there. He got like 7 or 8 boards, and but it's too late. The damage was already done at that point. If you have not played together at all, that's like going into the NBA Finals game as the Lakers in that championship. Actually, that's a horrible example because that's going back to 2020. Let's look at last year's winners, which was the Denver Nuggets. That's like saying like, well, you know what? Bruce Brown, we don't really like what you're doing in our lineup right now, so we're gonna throw in I don't know, who is a guy who is Will Barton. He wasn't even on the team, but like just throw Will Barton in there because I think maybe he'll make something happen. Like it's that level of equivalence. So when you have a Germany team that's been united or playing together, obviously that was the match we lost, the first match we lost, and then we go in there and lose to Canada. I think Dylan Brooks shooting 7 of 8 from three definitely has to do something to do with it. Part of the game plan, I'm sure, was let him shoot like we don't care, and it just happened to be one of those games where he just caught fire. One of those rare games. He I think said something about Kobe in his post game interview, something like these are the moments I thrive in. Like Kobe had to put a persona on the court just like I do or something. Like he's just saying stuff to say stuff, which good for Dylan Brooks. You know what? He had a good game against the U.S. Proved them wrong. But ultimately, I think the reason the U.S. lost was Jaren Jackson Jr. I think he was the biggest disappointment. He basically did not try on the boards, which is incredible. Our team was incredibly undersized, and teams took advantage of that just throughout the tournament.
Yeah, I mean, when you have Daniel Tice out here looking like Hakeem Olajuwon, that's a huge problem. And honestly, I would say the biggest reason why Germany was able to win this one was because of the rebounding. They just had way more second chance opportunities, just really closed out those offensive rebounds for the United States. And honestly, Germany just had guys who seemed like they wanted it more. You know, everybody on that Germany roster fought for that spot and is proud to represent their country. And, you know, I think it was I can't remember who, but someone was just talking about in the sort of NBA Twitter sphere about how the US men's basketball team should have tryouts again, because then there would be some competitive guys would fight to get in the roster, because now people are just selected. They don't really care that much. It's obviously in between NBA seasons, and you could tell players just don't fully care. I think it's like evident with a guy like Brandon Ingram, who, you know, is nowhere near the level he's at in the regular season in these international
Well,
games.
to be fair, I think with Brandon Ingram, part of the reason is he just doesn't really fit on a roster like this. When you put a ton of star talent together, Brandon Ingram, his game just doesn't translate. He needs the ball in his hands. When you have so many guys who deserve the ball in their hands, obviously, and Anthony Edwards, who became the leader of this team, that puts Brandon Ingram in a really weird spot because the things he's getting asked to do are things he hasn't had to do for his entire NBA career and probably not ever since he was in like high school.
Yeah, I mean that's a good point. But even a guy like Jaren Jackson Jr., who his primary like objective on this team could literally be just to rebound, and he couldn't even do that. And so, I mean, props to Germany, props to Dennis Schröder and Franz Wagner and co. They really balled out, and ended up taking the gold in this tournament against Serbia. We ended up predicting the finals, and in fact, the entire medals completely wrong. Germany took home the gold.
I think we had the exact opposite of what we thought would happen.
It's pretty. I mean, okay. I think we both had maybe Germany getting a medal.
I think we both had them at bronze.
Yeah, so we were completely wrong. And it's honestly surprising to me that Canada also didn't make it into that, you know, gold medal game. But it just shows the level of international talent that there is.
Yeah, Serbia, even without Jokic, made it to silver, which was very impressive.
Exactly. So you got to just credit these guys. I see a lot of people using this opportunity to sort of vindicate Noah Lyles and his comments about how the NBA championship doesn't really hold weight as the world championship. But I mean, if you look at the best players on any of these international teams, they're all NBA players. The best players around the world, go to play in the NBA. So I don't think this sort of counteracts that point.
Go ahead. Think about the fact that the U.S. is sending their C team every year, and when they lose, then they're like, oh, now we need to send in the big guns. And then the whole world complains. They're like, oh my God, they're sending over all this talent. Why is this fair? And that's like, you're literally just getting rid of everything you've just talked about you're validating the fact that American basketball players have been superior since the start of basketball. And obviously that's because it's an American sport and America cares about it the most. And if other countries cared about it just as much as America does, I'm sure their talent would be equivalent. But that's not the case.
That's true. But also, I mean, we have to recognize the game is getting more international. I mean, past few MVPs have all been international players between Jokic and Giannis, and obviously Luka Doncic, what he's been doing in the league. Even a guy like Shai Gilgeous-Alexander, I think that he's entering those top 10 player conversations. He's a guy from Canada. Obviously, it's not like super foreign Canada.
If you took a roster of the top five players from each country, obviously,
sure, yeah,
comparing the entire world to America is just showing how good America is at basketball.
Of course. And I don't think there's any disagreement there. But sort of piggybacking off of what you said about how when the U.S. loses, infamously, like this happened in, I think, 2008, right, with the Redeem team. Or was that 2012?
It was 2012 was the Redeem team.
Okay, yeah, so it was 2012 Redeem team where, the U.S. lost in the Olympics, and then they had to sort of assemble all the best talent to make sure that never happened again. Seems like we might be getting...
Sorry, I apologize. It was 2008 because Kobe played Pau, and he hung up a gold medal in Pau's locker. I apologize. Yeah, I just remember the Kobe stories, so it was 2008.
I thought it was 2008, but... So anyways... we seem to be getting a sequel to that with the U.S. With a lot of notable players from the U.S. saying that they have interest in playing for the Olympic team next year. And I think that, the king of this is the king himself, LeBron James, saying he's going to play in the 2024 Olympics. You also have commitments from guys like Steph Curry, KD, Anthony Davis, Draymond, Jason Tatum. And I think there's been some interest as well from guys like Devin Booker, Damian Lillard, De'Aaron Fox, Desmond Bain. Okay. caliber.
Bam Adebayo also interesting.
Yeah. So we could be seeing a sort of superstar roster in the Olympics again next year. I mean, what do you think of this, Hunter? Do you think that this is actually going to happen? And two, do you think any other team in the world stands a chance if this does happen?
Hey, man, I think it would be a lot of fun. I don't think anyone would have a chance. I think realistically there you could talk about like two or three teams out there. I think Serbia would always have a shot. Slovenia, like Luka and Jokic have been born to play in this league. And also Greece, like between those three teams have a shot because these guys have been playing FIBA since they were 15, 16 years old. They know the game in and out, and the NBA players just don't. So they have an advantage in that aspect. But when you just add so much talent that works together so well. I mean, like Steph Curry and LeBron alone, is going to be incredible because we've never actually had the opportunity to see these two guys play together on the same team outside of like all-star games where they're not really trying. But to see two guys like this play in tandem with such complementary games and games where it does matter is going to be incredible. Obviously, KD, AD, and Draymond are just perfect complements to that as well. And if Devin Booker also plays, you're probably looking at a starting lineup of Steph, Devin Booker, LeBron, KD, and AD. That's ridiculous. And
That's
then
a crazy lineup.
Draymond and Tatum coming off the bench. Like, that's
And
just
maybe even like
ridiculous.
Dame Lillard coming off the bench or something like
Damian
that.
Lillard, Bam Adebayo, like
De'Aaron
that would just be
Fox.
crazy. Yeah.
Unbelievable. And
So,
that would just be a fun team to watch, as you were saying. I think
yeah.
that honestly, I wouldn't be surprised if teams made it competitive. I think that what we're seeing is that there is a sort of level of competitiveness in international play that we've never seen before. And so, yeah, if like Serbia with Nikola Jokic is, playing, maybe they do make it competitive. Maybe there are stretches where Team USA is down. Because I think an underrated aspect of this international play is one, the program, and two, the sort of system, right? Like, I think when Jokic goes to play with his home country, like, he knows exactly how everyone's playing. They have a system, they have chemistry. And while there is a lot of talent on these USA rosters, always, even when we're sending out our C team, like we did in this FIBA World Cup, the pieces don't always gel together, and it takes time for them to sort of make it work. And so I think that's what we saw this year. And we could see that next year at the Olympics, even with this star-studded roster. So, I mean, nothing's a guarantee anymore. The US can't take it for granted, but I do think that this sort of chip on their shoulder that is coming out of a result of the US continually losing in the FIBA World Cup will certainly help. I think that's definitely going to give them the edge. So,
Oh yeah. You also can't discount the fact, I mean, other NBA players from other countries have this too, but the fact that all these NBA players are coming off of postseason runs and, kind of just being a little more tired and worn out, like that absolutely plays a factor. But that's kind of negated a little bit by guys like Giannis, Jokic, Embiid. Like, can you imagine coming into this year if Embiid declares he's playing for France because Cameroon is a French colony, he's allowed to play for the French team. So it's like Rudy Gobert and Joel Embiid, Evan
Wembanyama,
Fournier,
obviously.
Wembanyama. Oh my God, can you imagine how massive that team would
Oh
be?
my God. They could run a lineup where you have like Wembanyama at the
Yeah,
three.
that's stupid.
No, but I think that, yeah, it certainly would be interesting,
Yeah.
entertaining. And I really hope, like, if the US sends out their best rosters, I want every other team to send out their best rosters. I want Jokic to play. I want Giannis to play. I want Luka to play. So hopefully we get to see that. And it's gonna be a fun Olympics next year.
I'd like to add in, like, I mean, the last Summer Olympics we had in 2020, you can look back at that and say there was a good amount of international talent in the league. But if you look at the context, that was Giannis's second MVP, but Jokic hadn't really risen to that level yet. Luka had was just coming into the league, so now you're seeing this rise of international top tier NBA talent. This is probably going to be the first Olympics where there's far more parity across multiple teams than in the past. Like in the past, like against the Redeem team, you saw Spain was really good. You had like there were, always like one or two teams that were good. I feel like now we're going to see like eight or nine different teams that can compete with the US on any given night.
Yeah, and that just again speaks to the level of international play. I think with that though, we can move on to the next topic here. And that's something relating to the NBA here, and specifically about star players. It's another move from Adam Silver's NBA and the Board of Governors to sort of ensure that star players are playing and to sort of fight back against this era of load management. The NBA Board of Governors is going to be voting on a new policy preventing teams from resting two star players in the same game. And a star is defined as someone who has made an all-star or all-NBA team in the past three seasons. And so, Hunter, what do you think of this? Are you in agreement with this change, if it ends up going through? And do you think this is the best possible implementation to curb this era of load management?
Yeah, I mean, I think it's tricky. I think what they're basically trying to deny here is, look, people are paying good money to see these games really far in advance, right? You have no guarantee if you're buying an NBA ticket buyer today, if you're a Clippers fan, let's say, because the Clippers are the prime example of a team who does this, and you buy your tickets in November and you are going to see a game in February, you have no guarantee, and it is likely that Paul George and Kawhi Leonard will not be playing in that game because it's, getting close to the postseason, so they're resting. And you paid now $200 a ticket, and you have to watch Terrence Mann as the best player on a Clippers roster, and they get blown out by 45 points to the Oklahoma City Thunder. That's not fun. So, I respect the NBA for doing this. Hey, Paul George, you got to play tonight. Kawhi, you can play the next night, whatever it is. But you're giving the fans something to actually beat the game for. And, you know, fans won't be as mad when or disappointed, especially young kids when they come to these games and they don't get to see, you know, the guys that inspired them to play the game. So I do like this move, but I think it's also a little bit tricky for NBA teams. You know, guys do get hurt. So obviously, I'm sure they won't make guys play who are actually hurt. But how does this work for teams where you have multiple injury-prone stars and they some of these guys actually just both are unable to play in a given night?
I also think that this is a bit of a stretch of a definition for star. I think that there's some edge cases where this could be kind of unfortunate. Like on the Minnesota Timberwolves, like Karl Anthony Towns couldn't rest in the same game where Mike Conley is resting because Conley was an all-star in 2021. So like, I think there could be some scenarios like that where it's a little bit unfortunate.
Or like for the Utah Jazz, Lauri Markkanen was an all-star. So now Lauri Markkanen can't rest the same time as Colin Sexton.
Yeah, that's a good point. So there's a lot of scenarios like that. So maybe there needs to be some adjustment about like what constitutes a star. Maybe just limit it to maybe one or two seasons instead of three, or just base it off of all NBA teams or something like that to just sort of ensure that we don't have these edge cases. But in general, I am a fan of this move. I think that, as you were saying, like if you're a Clippers fan, it shouldn't be the case where you always have to sort of pray that you can see at least one of these star players, the guys who are supposed to represent your franchise, play the basketball game that they're getting paid millions of dollars to play for sake of load management. And I think that, you know, the NBA is a business. We say this all the time, and they're just trying to make the product better. And you have to be completely honest, the NBA is better when the stars are playing. So I think that's, this is a good move in that direction. Maybe needs a little bit of sharpening around the edges, but in general, I am in favor of this.
Okay, yeah, I think for the most part, most people would be happy with this, but I think now we can move on to a little bit of a darker topic, and we're just going to cover it real quick because it is important news. Kevin Porter Jr. is now in custody for allegedly assaulting his girlfriend. It seems to be the case that this did happen as more news is unraveled. We don't know the extremity or, what did occur. But, you know, this is very unfortunate. You never like to hear stuff like this. But, you know, we can only assume that this is going to stunt his time in the NBA in some way, shape, or form, similarly to Miles Bridges.
Right.
And, you know, I don't want to focus on him too much, but somebody I do want to focus on, Amen Thompson. It kind of was a tricky situation between him and Kevin Porter Jr. being both like kind of the established point guards for this team. And we'd already assumed that with, you know, Amen being the draft pick, that kind of Kevin Porter Jr. was on the way out of that starting spot. But how does this impact Amen Thompson if Kevin Porter Jr. Is deemed unable to fit on the NBA team?
I mean, first of all, I just want to say, like, obviously domestic violence, like we like outright condemn that if Kevin Porter Jr. actually did it, and like that does not deserve a spot in the league, regardless of how talented you are, like that behavior just doesn't fly. I also want to just say one thing that like I think we see this more predominantly in these young teams that lack a lot of veteran presence. Like I think we see this with the Hornets a lot too, with Miles Bridges, with guys like that, even Kai Jones recently. I don't know if you saw his Instagram live, but it seemed like he might have been on some substances and it was just not a good look overall. I think that these young teams often lack a lot of veteran leadership, which can steer them in the right direction to avoid these mistakes or these outright crimes. Like, because obviously what Kevin Porter Jr. did was not a mistake. It was like an outright like horrible act. I think that veterans are important. These are mentor figures that these players can look up to. They can talk about, they can find resources through them. And so I think that even if it's not, I think that you can't really put the value of a older mentor veteran figure into like a salary. They're almost invaluable in that sense, which is why a guy like Udonis Haslem was on the Heat for far longer than he ever like provided utility on the basketball court. You know, he was a coach, he was a mentor, he was just a guy that players could look up to and to talk to. So I want to say that for NBA teams, if you're young, like you want to really emphasize those older veterans who can be a source of guidance for those younger players as they mature in, you know, mature not only in the basketball sense, but as people. We got to understand these are guys who are like 19, 20 years old. You know, they're still in the age where they have a lot to learn. And so, like, you need the right people and the right mentors to guide them.
Yeah. So, well, I mean, like, sometimes it even takes multiple guys because look at the Grizzlies. Like, Steven Adams is there. And
yeah, but Steven really Adams, stop. I mean, he's a guy who doesn't really come across as, like, outspoken and being a mentor. And I, to be honest, I don't think Ja and Steven Adams have like a particularly close relationship. Like, I wouldn't call him like
that's true.
A mentor figure in any sense of the word.
But on this topic, do you think that there's been like sort of this lack of like veterans claiming rookies, if you know what I mean? Like, you know, in the past you had like Chris Paul was J.R. Smith's rookie, or like, you know, Kobe was Shaq's rookie. Like, the guys, like, it's, you know, it's a sort of hazing, but at the same time, it's like a way to gain respect and a form of discipline. I'm not condoning like NBA players like hazing other NBA players or like doing things that would be considered dangerous or illegal or stupid, but I think it gave a lot of these players a sense of discipline and respect to not do these sorts of things. And I'm sure those things did happen, but it just happened. It seemed like it happened less, you know, 10, 15 plus years ago. Do you think that could have any impact on them?
It might, honestly, it might. I can't really say for certain because I don't think we know the inner workings of these NBA teams. But I think that a lot of the times these young teams sort of trend in the direction of going all young. Like, you'll just see them have no veterans whatsoever, like the Hornets or the Rockets. Obviously the Rockets tried changing it up this season, but you know, when you have only young guys, like, that can sometimes be a recipe for disaster. So I think it's like partially what you're saying, partially what I'm saying. And that's sort of been a big issue in the league.
Yeah. But going back to Amen Thompson, how do you think this impacts him?
I mean, I think this is obviously going to give him a bigger role if KPJ is not on the team. I think that he was going to have a pretty significant role in this team. I think that the Rockets haven't given up on KPJ, but I think they know that his role is not going to be as the primary point guard on this team. And obviously, I think Amen Thompson is going to at least start behind Fred VanVleet for that point guard position. But I think, honestly, Amen Thompson could play his way into being the starting point guard. I think he's that talented, and he's that much of a unique talent where he's an oversized point guard, incredibly high IQ, out-of-the-gym athleticism. And yeah, I think this is just I think it's just going to lead to a more prominent role for Amen Thompson. But
yeah,
obviously these situations, you never want to hear about them, and the circumstances are horrible. And, you know, prayers to like any, like, you know, whoever was affected. I'm not too familiar with all the details for this, but it's just a horrible situation.
Yeah. Unfortunate that I have a photo of me with him in my phone.
Oh, you might want to delete that one, bro. You might want to delete that one.
Yeah, sorry. Oops. But moving on, I think we can talk about the Spurs, talk about these other young teams. We had two big things, or I wouldn't say two big things, two more minor things happen. So Campaign got waived by the Spurs after kind of jumping around the league in trades. And who do you think should pick him up? Because he's definitely a valuable guy. He averaged 10-5 for the Suns. And in 2021, on that championship run, he looked like a really valuable, bright player for the future.
I mean, honestly, a reunion in Phoenix doesn't seem out of the question to me. I think that that's a team that could use maybe another guard, considering they don't really have many point guards. I think that, you know, they're going to be running the book at point to start the year. And I'm not saying Campaign should start, but, you know, he's already familiar with the system. I mean, like, at least a few of the players there. I know they're bringing in Frank Vogel, but I wouldn't be opposed to seeing him with a reunion in Phoenix, or even maybe Dallas is another team I could see. I think that Dallas
was the first team that came to mind.
Yeah, it's definitely a team that I think could use a backup point guard and kind of just a flamethrower off the bench. He's not going to help them defensively, but, you know, to get him a couple buckets, or if they end up making a playoff run, to, you know, be a consistent source of scoring, I think that Campaign could be that guy.
Is Malcolm Brogdon still on the Celtics?
Yeah, I believe so.
I believe he is.
Yeah.
Okay. I was going to say, if he wasn't there, I think Campaign would fit there, but I believe he is. No, I think Campaign could be a very valuable sort of rest for Kyrie and, you know, Luka. giving some backup minutes there. It seems like they definitely lack a tertiary ball handler, especially because Kyrie and Luka are going to be playing on the floor a lot together. So this is definitely a guy they should go after. And I think this is a guy that can be on a team that is looking to make a real run. I don't think he has to be on like a bad team, like a, I don't know, Spurs. I mean, obviously they waived him, but just like, or Orlando. I think he can provide meaningful basketball and maybe actually even a team like OKC. Like, I feel like he could be good in OKC as a backup there. Kind of play that Dennis Schroeder type role that he played in OKC behind Chris Paul, obviously being Shea. So I think he definitely has a spot in the league on a lot of teams.
Yeah, for sure. And I think that like the reason the Spurs waived him is because he didn't fit their timeline, and also because campaign has some meaningful basketball to contribute to a contender. So, one that's yeah, that's definitely notable to mention. And I guess the other piece of Spurs news is that Victor Wembanyama, he's expected to actually play power forward instead of center, despite being 7'3", sort of following the footsteps of other unicorn players like Kristaps Porzingis. So what do you think of this move? Do you think it's wise, or do you think that the Spurs should rethink their intentions?
Look, I mean, defensively, it might become a little bit of a nightmare, but it'll be good for him in some sense because he can play sort of the off-ball rim runner kind of guy who can, you know, just blindside players attacking the rim. So I think that could be good defensively. I think it also has implications that he'll have to space the floor and be out in the perimeter on defense. That could be a little scary if he's not as mobile as we'd like him to be. But ultimately, I think this is a net positive. Kind of reduces that risk of injury for him. You know, he won't have to bang up with guys like Joel Embiid, Giannis, which we figured they weren't going to make him do that anyway. But this just solidifies that. And I think, did you see that video of him like being super flexible, like basically bending his body in half?
It's
So
pretty
I mean,
crazy.
yeah. So and like doing the splits and stuff. So clearly, this is a guy, and he also looked like he put on some muscle. This is a guy who is doing things the right way, you know, treating his body, you know, with care. And I'm glad that the Spurs aren't seeing him do these things and then just go, oh, okay, he's treating his body the right way and he's building muscle so we can just throw him in there with the dogs. Like, this is something that's going to take time to build up. And, you know, you see guys come into the league like, you know, when Giannis came into the league, he was a skinny, small guy, very young. And I'm not saying Wemby would ever be able to have a body like Giannis, but I'm glad that they're not just throwing him into it and letting him maybe build muscle over time. And then 3 years down the line, hey, now you're ready to go do that.
Yeah, I agree with that. I think that, I think it's a bit of a wise move. I think that players like Wembanyama fits more into that Porzingis category, where I think that he might thrive to go against those smaller guys at power forward, and doesn't might not have the physical intangibles yet to sort of bang up with the big guys like a Jokic or a Joel Embiid, the guys that you mentioned. I am a little concerned for the Spurs because, I mean, who are they going to run at center instead? Like Zach Collins, maybe? Like
Oh,
after
my
Zach
God. They're
Collins.
going to be so skinny. Zach Collins and Victor Wembanyama sounds like the skinny legends. That's what their nickname would be.
Mean, who else are they going to? Are they going to run Jeremy Sochan as at center? Like, I'm genuinely very curious how this is
What
going to
how
work.
tall is Jeremy Sochan? Like 6'8"?
I think he's like 6'9". Yeah, he's 6'8", actually. But
Yeah.
yeah, I'm not too
Okay. So
sure.
they definitely can't run Jeremy Sochan at center. Yeah, I mean that's rough. But if they're running him at power forward, obviously they don't intend to be a good team. So they're just trying to develop the guys they have, which I think they definitely have an opportunity to do. You know, they don't have to play a center that people know. You know, they just need to develop Wemby in the role they want him to be in. And they have to cater to whatever that means for them. And if that means that they need him to play power forward, they're gonna make him play power forward. Because this year isn't it's not like, oh, we need him to play center because if we don't, we're going to lose games. They don't care if they lose games. So,
This is
yeah.
another sort of or sorry, there was another center on the roster of the Spurs. I was looking into this earlier. I can't pronounce his name. I literally would probably cast like a spell in from Harry Potter if I tried saying his name. It's like
I gotta look it up.
Sandro Mamulashevsky. I don't know. Let me pull it up
Okay,
right now.
let me try this. Sandro Mamukelashevsky. Shalevi. Where's he from? God.
Is Georgian.
He's okay. Okay.
Yeah.
Mamukel Shevili. What the hell?
Mamukelashvili. Mamukelashvili.
Okay, this
Wait.
needs to be the title of the podcast episode.
Wait, I found
Mamukela
it. It's Mamukelashvili. Mamukelashvili.
Shevli.
Mamukelashvili.
I'm excited for the announcers to pronounce this.
Yeah. Oh, and there's Mamulukashavskavi for three. Yeah, no, it's
Yeah,
very
apparently he
crazy.
played in f he I was averaging 6 points and 4 rebounds a game last year. So we could in 15 minutes a game. So this is a guy who's definitely be getting some playing time.
Yeah, I mean, I'm excited to see him. I'll never forget his name now.
Oh yeah. Oh yeah, big time. Who else is
So
gonna play? Like Gorgui Dang? Like, is that who they're planning on starting?
I guess so. We'll see, man. We'll see. But
Yeah.
I think that might be a good place to call it. We're ramping up to the
Yep.
NBA season, so this is a bit of a shorter one. But thank you all so much for listening, and we'll see you all in the next pod. Take care.
Peace.